Fang Bang.
Hello and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast. We're chaotic, horny friends rewatching the chaotic, horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Elise.
And I'm Tasia.
This week we're discussing Season 2, Episode 6, Hard-Hearted Hannah. This episode originally aired on July 26th, 2009. It was written by Brian Buckner and directed by Michael Lieben.
It's our boy again.
This is a summary that I've edited down because it was way wordy. Eggs has memories of a creepy-as-fuck place he's been to before. Sam and Daphne are having a good time and go frolicking in the woods, but she basically betrays him. Eric does some plotting. In Dallas, Sookie and fellow human Hugo pose as an engaged couple looking for a church to wed. To be wed at. It sounds a lot better. where they meet the Newlands and have a tour of the church. Jason is asked to build a scaffold for a sunrise ceremony where a vampire will be exposed to the dawn sun before the entire congregation. That is brutal as fuck sounding. And he's starting to have some doubts about what's going on here.
Understandably so.
Yes, I would say.
The more we dig into this church situation, the more shady this shit seems. True.
I'm still laughing at the scene earlier in the season when Sookie's like, they're a church, they wouldn't kidnap somebody. Yeah. Like, oh, sweet summer child.
Shall we introduce you to history?
Yeah. I love how Bill was like, kind of like called her out on that. I was like, maybe that's not the case. So before I was getting into even anything relating to the episode, I was like, this episode title is very specific sounding, and I wanted to know what that was, so I googled it, and Hard-Hearted Hannah the Vamp of Savannah is actually the song that Bill is performing in the first flashback, but I had not heard it before. It's a popular song with words by Jack Yellen, Bob Bigelow, and Charles Bates, and music by Milton Ager. The song was published in June 1924 by Agar, Yellen, and Bornstein, Inc. in New York. It tells the story in a humorous fashion of a sadistic vamp or femme fatale from Savannah, Georgia. Which seems to me that this song might be a little bit about Lorena.
Yeah, I love when they take like a metaphorical type of word usage, like vamp. Like, obviously, they didn't intend to mean vampire when they wrote the song. And then they make that literal in a show like this. I think it's really fun.
I like that as well. I also felt like for the first time, I really understood the Hotel Carmilla name.
Yeah.
So I was talking with Lazzy like a week or two ago, and he said after he and Melissa were podcasting, I haven't listened to that episode yet because it's not out, they were talking about the story Carmilla, which actually predates Dracula by 25 years.
Yeah.
It came out in 1872 and Dracula came out in 1897, if I recall correctly. I read Dracula last year for the first time and absolutely loved it. But Carmilla is very lesbian. And it's short, like the audio. I listened to the audio drama version on Audible with Rose Leslie as I think her name was Laura. She was the like innocent like main character.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really good, and she did a really good job. So I definitely recommend that to anyone that's interested in the story of Carmilla.
I have been wanting to read Carmilla for years and years, and I don't know why, I just have never gotten around to it, but
yeah.
I get the hotel reference, which is really fun, and I knew that it's gay and that it predates Dracula, which is all like just really cool and really interesting. So I don't know why I haven't read it yet, but one day.
Yeah, I had heard of it too, but I had forgotten about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think you would like it, and it's super super short.
Yeah.
I don't remember the author's name, but he is Irish. If I recall, like, I was looking it up while I was reading it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, like, literally no reason why I haven't read this yet. I just need to do it.
You're just busy.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Always.
All right. I really like this episode. A lot of stuff happens. A lot of plans go awry.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Terry remains the best. I like how he's there for Lafayette in that one scene. It just like made me want
to. I love it because he recognizes the symptoms of PTSD because he's been through it himself. And so he goes and he comforts him. Knew. It's so sweet. I just love, like you said, Terry remains the best. He's such a good boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And speaking of good boys, Hoyt.
We got our lovely Hoyt.
I love that he comes to see Jessica because he doesn't want her to think that he's ignoring her because his mom shut off his phone.
Imagine also, if men acted that way. Right, because I've never met any.
Right, they're like, my phone was off, what? But I also love that he stands up to his mom and her friend for Jessica. And he's like, he doesn't try to hide the fact that his girlfriend's a vampire because he knows that they're going to be judgmental. He's just like, you know what? Mm-hmm. Fuck you. Like, my girlfriend's a vampire. And if you don't like that, we'll have words.
I also feel like my only complaint about this, and it's not a real complaint, is that Hoyt, just like get your own cell phone plan, like without your mom. Like
that umbilical cord is so, like, it needs to be cut. It needed to be cut at least 10 years ago.
I would say 20 years ago.
Well, I mean, he's got to only be, he's probably what, like 20, 26? Jason's older than Sookie.
I think he's 26 or something.
Sookie's 26, right? And Jason's older than her probably by a year or two. So he's got to be like 27 if he's Jason's age.
No, I'm just being.
Yeah.
I'm just hating on Hoyt's mom.
No, for real. For real. But at least he knows that she, like, he's not one of those mama's boys that is like. Like, the umbilical cord is clearly still there when it should not be, but he isn't like, no, but my mom is a wonderful lady, you know? Like, he knows that it's fucked up. He knows that this is not okay.
Yeah, I think he might have been, I would imagine he maybe would be like that in the past if it was someone he didn't care about as much as Jessica, but, like, we don't have witness to that. Just it's like, just something I think.
I feel like it's a miracle that Hoyt grew to be such a good person, looking at who his mother is. I
wonder
what
his dad was like.
Yeah, I don't know where he got this from, like how he became such a good person in spite of his upbringing.
Did we ever find out like when his dad died or any of that?
I remember zero things separated? About I don't remember. Hoyt's dad. I don't know if it ever, I mean, I hope it comes up so we get an answer, but I don't remember anything.
Right. I like to think that Hoyt's dad was nice and that maybe his mom became an asshole after he died. Because I don't want to think that his nice dad had a shitty asshole wife.
Yeah.
This episode also brings us a lot of people fucking in public.
Brought to you by Fucking in Public.
The letters S, E, and X.
And the number is 69.
Perfect.
All right, shall we do plot?
Yes. I didn't really do a specific order, but I think it's fine how I put it in the notes.
Yeah.
So we have Eric, who is very plotting away, and he invites Bill's maker and ex, Lorena, to Dallas because he wants Sookie, and he's like, what if I distract Bill with this shiny thing or someone I know can overpower him?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Eric.
We learn that Lorena hasn't seen Bill in about 70 years, which is really interesting because we've only seen her in the flashbacks of when Bill was made so far, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so if it's been 70 years and this is taking place in the early 2000s, like 2008, right?
Yeah.
So the flashback we get is in 1926. So that's about, like, so are we saying that, like, within the next few years he and Lorena like go separate ways and never see each other again, like around this flashback time?
Yeah.
Or is that,
I mean,
like, it's within,
I
like
did
10
some
years
calculator
or
math. Yeah, I think it's within 10 years because if you do the math, it would probably be like after 1935 or something.
Yeah.
But it's, like, it's Prohibition now, and Prohibition ended in 1933, right? I think.
Yeah. Or I don't know, actually. Yeah. I just said, yeah, I have no idea.
When did Prohibition end? Yep, December 5th. Oh, wait, hold on. Yep, 1933. See, I learned something in history
there
class.
You go.
The important things when we're allowed to drink alcohol.
Right.
Again. Yeah, so Okay, I will say that this party that they're at in their flashback seems like a lot of fun. They're hosting a bunch of people. Bill's playing hard-hearted Hannah on the piano. Lorena is pretending to be a French lady and inviting this couple to stay back with them, and they think it's for some swinger sex, which probably it happened, I'm sure.
Yeah, I wonder how, like, do you think that they, like, did the old swaparoo before they attacked, or do you think they just went straight for the attack?
I hope that they all fucked first, because that is way more fun. I mean, like, it would be really nice if this couple gets to, like, have sex before they die. Like, one last time.
One out with but, a bang.
Exactly. That one lady was, like, really cute, though. The one that they...
She her was husband cute.
Looked very much... The husband looked a little too, like, 2005 for me. Modern, like, he looked really modern in his face. But I do think the
so
makeup
true.
With the thin eyebrows really works for the two. For even Lorena yeah. had the, like, thin eyebrows back
and
then.
And the lip shape, too. It was really good. It was
yeah.
all really well done.
It was really funny because the woman was really pale. Mm-hmm. But Lorena had, like, the pale makeup on, probably to cover her, like... vampire-ness.
Yeah.
But it was just fun style. Lorena's dress was gorgeous. I love that woman's necklace that they stole at the end.
The way he gives it to her, like, it's this big romantic gesture as if he didn't
like
just...
Like, he, like, went out to, like,
exactly.
Tiffany's and bought her
exactly.
this
Like,
present.
He bought, like, he spent thousands of... He just took it off of a dead body and was like... She's like, you're so generous. It's so funny.
Like, it was, like... It, like, had probably just occurred to him. Oh, here's a pretty thing. Let me give it to you.
Yeah,
like...
yeah. The flashback that's too, really speaking of like vampire-ness, that's the most like a vampire Bill has looked in this entire show. Like there's something about the suit, yeah. the hair, the makeup, whatever
yeah.
he's doing in that scene, like he looks like a vampire. If I were at that party, I would have suspicions, I feel like.
Yeah. And it's the most he's acted like a vampire that we've seen
yeah.
as well. He and Lorena are... eating unwilling participants, like they're living as vampires. We have not seen this side of Bill before. In our flashbacks, or in his flashbacks, we don't own the flashbacks.
Doesn't it seem like,
you know, he's
so like typically Bill to like remember his own history as him being very innocent,
so clean and puritanical.
Right.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. And then Lorena's flashback is like, yeah, we killed and ate all these people.
She's like, no, actually.
We had a nice time.
Actually, we were doing some fucked up shit. Have no doubt.
Yeah. It's just, they just fucked in a big pool of blood, basically, on a bed.
Yeah.
Which was still really hot, actually.
And so at this point, it's been, you know, like probably about 80 years since this happened. And Lorena is still mm-hmm. wearing that necklace. And, like,
yes,
no spoilers, but, like, obviously Lorena isn't going away at this point, like, right, not yet, at least.
Right.
And I really, like, in fiction, I really, really hate the trope of the insanely jealous ex-girlfriend that, like, shows up and has to sabotage her ex's new relationship. Like, you see it in so many things. You see it in, like, Vampire Diaries. It's, like, everywhere. I hate it as a trope. I really, really do. But... I think it does make a little bit more sense in like a vampire context, just because, mm-hmm. you know, they emphasize the connection between maker and makey, I guess, that there's a lot, like, even if you like hate this person or you never see this person, like there's a bond there. There's like a literally,
yeah.
you cannot sever this bond.
And we see it when they finally meet toward the end of the episode. Like, she's overtaken him, and
right.
there's nothing he could do about
and
it.
And she's like, yeah, like your blood calls to my, or, like, my blood calls to you. Like, our blood is, like, it's like, family, but, like, weird, incestuous family.
Yeah. Yep. And, I mean, we see how close, I mean, I feel like Pam and Eric, like, are a really good example of that, although I think
mm-hmm.
Pam... in her own way, wants to be with Eric. I don't
yeah.
think it's like,
yeah,
I don't think
she's
it's just
not
Eric,
being
like
compelled.
Having control of him.
Right. I think if Pam wanted to go
like
off and do
he
her
could.
Own thing.
He could do that. Yeah. Yeah. Take a couple
but,
years
we,
off to do XYZ.
Yeah. We also see that with Eric and his, like, we haven't seen, except for like that one flashback, we haven't seen Eric with Godric in present day, but we see his Correct. His dedication and his like loyalty to his maker.
Mm-hmm.
So he clearly feels that way about his own maker. So it is like an unbreakable
yeah,
bond.
Yeah, he says he hasn't seen his maker in about 70 years either. So
yeah,
it's clearly a different relationship because he... I can't imagine... We haven't seen a situation where Bill has to, like, feel something because, like, Lorena's in trouble. Like, that hasn't been shown to us. So I don't know what that would be like.
Yeah. I don't know. Can vampires feel that between each other, or is it just on the humans they've given their blood?
I don't know, because I can't tell, like... I guess... I don't mean, like, the feeling, but, mm-hmm. like, I don't mean, like, a physical feeling, like, how Bill reacts when Sookie's in trouble, but just, like, the sense of loyalty
yeah.
with how Eric is, like, needing to help Godric.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he obviously found out because the Dallas people called him. It wasn't like he felt it in his bones or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. I'm looking forward to further unpacking how... You know, just vampire politics and relationships and yep. stuff. It's interesting.
I love it. We have a couple other... so we have Sam and Daphne hanging out, and then we have Tara, Eggs, and Marianne. And those two stories, I guess, converge at the end.
Yeah.
But I'll go into Sam and Daphne first. They seem to be having a really nice time. There's not the bickering that he had with Tara or the, I guess... thoughts of you led me on with Sookie. Mm-hmm. Not to get into all of that again, but like they're having a really nice time. He asks her about her gash. I said that word on purpose this time. Lazzie reminded us, which I had known this, but I had forgotten that the word gash is a slur in England. So apologies, I guess. It's not here, so I'm going to continue saying it. But Daphne has that big scar in her back that looks like Sookie's scratch from a few episodes ago. And she said she remembers it happening, but she doesn't remember who jumped her. And she gives him, like, a little bit of encouragement. Like, you shouldn't hide who you are to the people that love you. You should share your life with people. And it just, I agree with her.
Yeah, it's it makes the whole betrayal at the end much worse because you see like how yeah. genuinely like relieved like Sam's got this weight lifted off of his shoulders that he can just fully mm-hmm. be himself with somebody. He can
yeah.
he's so excited to just like go running in the woods with her, like just being their mm-hmm. their animal selves. Like this is
yeah.
this is so great for him and something he needed, that kind of connection with somebody. So badly. He's been so lonely for so many years. And yep. It's just, it makes that betrayal that much worse.
Yeah. It seems to me they even joking, I'm half joking, but like, they seem to have like similar kinks too. Like, they're doing that whole, like, even though it's like their actual
You're
roles,
my boss.
That whole like
yeah.
employee, yeah, like taking advantage of role playing thing. And mm-hmm. they both seem to be really into that, which is adorable.
Yeah.
But yeah, but we do find out that Daphne is the pig that Andy saw at Marianne's that time that everyone thinks he's crazy for. And I assume she was the pig at the beginning of this, or at the end of last season.
Yeah. I remember when I first saw.
Which is pretty big news.
Yeah, yeah. When I first saw this and I realized that Daphne was the pig, it was like a huge oh shit moment.
Yeah.
So yeah, she takes Sam to Marianne, and looks like there might be a little sacrificial situation brewing.
Yeah, it's not great.
Bad look for Daphne.
I do like, you know, Sam frustrated us, of course, in season one, and he always frustrates us. And I say us because we've all talked about mm-hmm. this. With regard to his expectations from Sookie a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I feel like at this point, just fire her. Like, she keeps taking advantage of you with regard to, like, needing off of work. You know, that's kind of annoying.
Like, Sam
anyway,
is allergic to firing people. There have been so many
instances.
I mean,
I'm really proud of him. I know. But I, of all of them, I'm glad he gave Lafayette a job back. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, my boy needs to work.
Yeah. It's a good thing for all of our faves, but also, like, Sam, you're trying to run a business.
Yeah, here. That's true. I forgot what I was going with that. But yeah, it just sucks because, like, as you were saying, it's just he was finally having something really nice. And, like, you know, he sucks sometimes, but everyone deserves something nice unless you're, like, you know, Hitler or something.
But, like, no nice things for Hitler.
I wouldn't put Sam in that box, so.
No, yeah, he sucks, but he's not, like, you know, deserving of human sacrifice.
Yeah, no, he's not. On the other side of this, the beginning of this story, or that ending, the water heater at Sookie's is broken, and Marianne's being, like, a huge baby about it.
She's such an asshole.
Like, just go to a hotel or something, lady. Like, it's fine.
She's there because she, like, strong-armed her way, like, guilted Tara into letting her stay and then is acting like a fucking princess. Like, rub my feet while I complain about not having a hot shower. Yeah, Carl
was rubbing her feet the whole time.
Right. God, what a brat, you know? Yeah. And not a fun brat. Like, just a brat.
No, and she's being very mommy towards them, and not, I don't mean that in a hot way, because they're, like, asking her for permission to go get this part. Tara's asking for permission for Eggs to come with her. She has to convince her that she can't, like, read the map and drive at the same time, and it's, like, very, it's not, like, that is Tara's house. That's where Tara lives. Like, Tara should be in charge of, like,
exactly, what happens
with regards to fixing it. It's just, like, that's very, very strange dynamic.
When Tara is on the phone or whatever, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry that, like, the accommodations where I'm letting you squat are, like, not up to standard. And then Marianne's like, I don't appreciate sarcasm when I haven't had a hot shower. And then Tara apologizes, but I'm like, no, you were right. Like, she is complaining. Yeah. She, you know.
She's staying there with you for free. Like, you have every right to just be like, yo, chill, please.
And she guilted her into that situation. Like, that's that thing that people do, you know, where, like, they give you a bunch of stuff and then it's like, oh, but now you owe me. Like, they act like it's out of the kindness of your heart, but really she just wanted to be owed something.
Yeah, no, that's horrible. I hate that so much.
Yeah. Marianne's true colors are really coming through.
Oh, God, now I'm going to have that song stuck in my head. So, Tara, this scene is one of the things that specifically is, like, season two, I remember this. So, Tara and Eggs are driving to go get this part, which is apparently 2 hours away. And in the meantime, they pass this diner and this, like, park ground area. And Eggs doesn't think he's been there before, but he's remembering everything. Sorry about that beep. He's remembering, like, all these, like, oh, there's a diner up ahead. And then he brings her to this area. And it's, like, very clear that he'd been there before but has no memory of it. And it was really creepy. And there was, like, blood everywhere.
Yeah, it looks like. And, like, the weird, like, circle of stones, it seems like kind of a human sacrifice. And, like, markings on the rock in blood. It seems like another, which leading into the end of this episode is like, oh shit, because we've seen that kind of ritualistic setup before.
Yeah. Those markings made me think of like Yellow Jackets. I don't know if you watched that.
Oh, yeah. Totally. yeah.
And they come back.
No, I was just going to say that like as like a person that has like lived with other people before, like the idea of somebody like just trashing your house when they're staying with you.
Oh my God. And,
like,
it's horrible.
It makes me so mad.
Like, they weren't even gone like half a day and you trashed the house. Like, like shit clothes everywhere, cups everywhere, beer cans everywhere. And then it's like a trail of breadcrumbs, or as Tara says in the episode, the Reese's Pieces from E.T., which is a movie that I irrationally hate. So I've only seen it once, but I do like vaguely remember hearing about some Reese's Pieces. Yeah. They come out and find just everyone fucking naked, and fucking, well, not everyone
fucking naked.
Carrie Preston's contract had a no nudity clause. That is a joke. I have no idea. It seems like, oh, this is the kind of show where all the extras will have their tops off, but the like main characters will be wearing shirts. That happened on, like, Sex and the City a lot. Like, Sarah Jessica Parker never showed her tits, but, like, the other three women mm-hmm. always did.
Well, and Sookie does, not and it's always, her show, but, like, you know, she's...
Yeah, she, but it's usually not in front of, like, everyone. Right, it's yeah. just in front of, like, Stephen Moyer.
Her future husband.
Yes. So I just thought it was so funny during this orgy that's happening outside. Everyone's fucking. There was a couple threesomes, which I noticed. Carl's just walking around and monitoring everyone. Like, I can't tell, like, what his role
yeah,
is.
Yeah, what is his job there? Does he, like, adjust people? Like, what is he doing?
It'll feel better if you raise your butt a little bit higher.
He's, like, 2 inches to the... There you go. There you go.
And Marianne is doing her, like, dance vibrating thing. And we see... The next time we see... Tara and Eggs after this, they're just fucking doggy style.
Yep.
Which feels so extra. Like, I don't feel that in a show in 2023 you would have, like, one of the main characters doing that in a primetime show.
Well, it's interesting to me, too, because I feel like when they looked at the rock and they saw, like, the symbols and stuff on them, I feel like there was, like, a stick figure doggy style on there. I don't know if I'm making this up because I saw it. And then
no, that sounds.
And then it flashed like, to the familiar. Next, you know, then they didn't look at the rock anymore or whatever. So it was just like a flash of this. And I was like, maybe if I looked at it for longer than 2 seconds, I would be like, OK, that's not a stick figures doggy style. But it looked like that in the moment. And so then when we saw yeah. Eggs and Tara doing it, like it felt like a weird because they saw it connection. In the rock that. And then when they went into their like, yeah. you know. Their little like Marianne Hayes trance that was thing. Like their like yes. oh that's how we're gonna do it because we saw it on I don't know I could be extrapolating where there is nothing but
I very much think that you're right and I agree but I also just realized that Marianne has the same number of cylinders has the same number of syllables as Lavender so I'll have to do like a Lavender Haze Taylor Swift like parody with Marianne Haze.
That's so funny because I literally have that song stuck in my head yeah. right now like just from earlier.
It's such a good song.
It's a bop.
Yes. So at the end of this all as we said earlier Daphne has brought Sam to Marianne, and then Daphne puts the bullhead on Marianne's head, and it's fucking creepy. And that is, and then Sam screams at the top of his lungs, which is the cliffhanger.
Yeah, and we'll talk about our rankings later, but like, I'm throwing it out there. I think this is a really good cliffhanger.
Yeah, I like it as well.
Very effective.
So next we have Jason and Lechurch.
Lechurch.
Jason and Luke have been tasked with building this like platform for the vampire to meet the sun, which is like what they call making a vampire be outside until it burns to death. And it's really funny that Jason's first instinct is that he's being punished for some of his behavior in a previous episode.
For letting Sarah Newlin, pastor's wife, or reverend's wife, give him a hand job in the bathtub.
Yes. Which was very hot.
I want to shout out Luke and his fucking hillbilly hick ass saying cream de la cream. It was yes. very funny to me.
Was that in regard to, like... If you have sex with someone with a vampire, that's like the worst thing you can do. Or was that
it was
the
if you
married
have
woman?
If you have sex with a boy vampire, then you were like, oh, that is the cream de la cream of like sins.
I love it. It's like adultery with a married person, sex out of wedlock with a vampire, and then sex out of wedlock with a boy vampire.
And that he's ranking sex out of wedlock with a boy vampire over like bestiality and incest. Like yeah. where are your priorities, my dude?
Oh my gosh.
This is
we saw last
oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was gonna say we saw last week that Sarah's starting to feel very isolated in what Steve is like including or her in and not including her in. We saw a couple conversations where he was telling Gabe to do some shady shit and not telling Sarah about it. But, like, she's seeing it in front of her face in this episode. And she's, like, slightly horrified. I don't trust her, but I also feel very strongly that she's legit horrified about this. And she's telling Jason about it because I don't think she has anyone else to talk to.
I think this is a really good Sarah episode that gives her like a lot more depth. But I think it's really, and I think that like Sarah, for being, you know, generally kind of a shitty person, she has lines, and Steve is starting to cross these lines, and she's seeing a side of him. Like she said, she's seeing a side of him she hasn't seen before. And I think it's interesting that when we first meet these two, we see Sarah as like clearly the one pulling the strings. She's the one writing the scripts that Steve then reads off. She's the one, you know, Steve has a platform because of his dad, but then also because of Sarah, because Sarah has made him marketable. She's made him palatable to the audiences. Yep. She's the reason for his success, really, aside from the nepotism. And now he's like going off and doing his own things, and he's getting a little wild. He's getting kind of crazy with his like, you know, like
getting murdery.
Yeah, like let's have these public fucking assassinations of vampires. And now she's like, wait, and he's not listening to her anymore. And that's how you can see, like, she's like a really good publicist, mm-hmm. right? And now, like, he's not listening to her. And now he's starting to do he's gone rogue. And he's starting to be just like real out of pocket. And I thought it was really, really, I like that kind of decline with their relationship. And now that she's not in control of him, and he's like out of control totally. And how she tells Jason that she feels like she was put on this earth to serve a great man, and she thought it was Steve, but now she thinks it's Jason. Puke. But also it makes me feel really bad for her that's what she thinks.
I feel like it's funny because when someone says something like that, you think they're gonna say it's Jesus. Or I do, and that's like where my mind goes. And like Steve Newlin is not Jesus.
Well,
but obviously neither is Jason Stackhouse. I just think, like, I can't think that she really thinks that. Like, you don't know Jason, lady.
I think she's just desperate, right? She's just, like, reaching for...
I think she's just... Yeah, anything. And I think she's a little she's horny. So.
Oh, yeah, 1,000%.
But I did kind of enjoy her... I did agree with her when she said to Jason about having sex, how could this be wrong if it's what God's commanding me to do? And I'm like, you know what? She has a shitty husband. She should be having sex with Jason. Like, he'll make you feel nice, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. And it's why, like, she doesn't know that girl that they locked up is his sister, right?
Oh, yeah. She has no idea.
Like, does Jason not have... I can't remember. Did they, like, take Jason's phone when he got to camp? Like, is that a part of the thing? Or does he still have...
I think they probably did. But I also think, like, Sookie doesn't know what specific church he's at.
Yeah,
anyway.
But that's the thing. Like, if these two could be open with each other, like, we could have, like...
Yeah.
Skirted so many issues if, you know, she could
that's
just,
true.
Like, send
but I
Jason
just feel like Jason
text.
Would never have admitted that he was going to the
no, totally.
Hating church.
Totally. But, like, you know, if he knew that Sookie was there, he'd be losing his shit.
Oh, totally. Yeah. He basically was, like, upset he didn't get to kill Renee himself.
Mm-hmm.
Last season. I do love the show more when Jason gets to fuck, so I'm really happy that Jason gets to fuck again. It just, you know what? It's nice.
But it's really kind of like the only times that you see him really feel like sure about himself.
Yeah. It's, daydreaming.
All right. Well, speaking of Jason and Sookie.
Yes. So, at the start of the episode, Isabel, who we met recently, comes and brings her human, so it's like the equivalent of Sookie to her, to their hotel and says, well, why don't you, it'll be a better idea if you guys go as an engaged couple, like trying to get married and trying to find a church for your wedding. That'll be more believable than like a single woman.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think everyone agrees is a good idea, so that Sookie's not there just by herself. But I really, especially after last week, where, or it was 2 weeks ago, when we got to meet Barry, the bellboy, who is telepath, like Sookie. And now Sookie's getting to meet another human that dates vampires. And we have this lovely scene where she's, like, asking him for vampire dating tips. And, I mean, it doesn't go very well because he reminds Sookie that, you know, you'll die eventually and Bill will be the same age forever. It's just, I'm happy for Sookie that she's meeting people that have, like, similar experiences as her. It just something that she needs, and yeah. No one at home really. I mean, at home they have like the community experiences that she has, but it's you need to relate to people on more than one level.
Yeah. So it's like just Sam and Daphne, right? Nice. Like everybody needs exactly. to have that kind of
Steve Newland is really easy for Sookie to read, which is not surprising. She overhears in his brain him talking about the platform that they're building for the vampire death ritual thing, meeting the sun. And it's just really interesting having to watch her pretend to hate vampires.
She's having so much fun with it. Like, I love her. She just kind of, she's like, oh yeah, I'm just going to be quiet so I can listen better. But then she's like, la, 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 la.
Yeah, she's so nervous. I do the same thing when I'm nervous.
Yeah, it's like when you tell a lie and you like oversell it, like you provide mm-hmm. too many details. Yes. I love there's the smash cut where Sookie is being like, you know, every single one of like talking about the vampires, every single one of them is a vicious, bloodthirsty killer. And then it kind of there's like a smash cut to a flashback of Bill actually being a vicious, bloodthirsty killer in that scene where he and Lorena are killing that couple. And I think it's just such a great, like, ironic smash cut because she's lying to convince the Newlands that she is a vampire hater when she says this. And, like, she obviously doesn't actually believe this. But, like, it's kind of true because even for Bill, the person that she thinks is just, like, this perfect, like, moral upstanding person has also been that, like, vicious, bloodthirsty killer.
Yeah. Yeah. I also just really enjoy that. I enjoyed the part where Hugo was, like, trying to coach her on what to say. And she was like, I hear the thoughts that even the worst people are afraid to say out loud.
Yeah.
I have a really good reference for what to say.
Right.
It's just really funny. She eventually hears that Steve knows that she could hear him, knows that the vampire sent her, and she hears Sarah thinking maybe Sookie was not given a choice to be here. Like, Sarah, like, didn't want to, like, blame the humans that were doing this, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. And she tries, sort of, to, kind of pump the brakes on that whole situation, but Steve is not listening to his publicist anymore and is just, you know, full steam ahead. So Sookie and Hugo get thrown into the basement.
Yeah, that was...
And that sucks, though, because it reminds me of that... you saw a girl with the dragon tattoo, right? Like the yeah, American course. One or whatever.
I'm laughing because I've been talking about this movie the last 3 days for some reason. So it's really, really funny that you brought it up.
It's so random.
I want to rewatch it.
It's good. So there's that scene where Daniel Radcliffe, oh my God, Daniel Craig is in...
I mean, they're both hotties, so...
Is in Skarsgård's dad, actually, his house, and he's like,
yes,
so. You know, he got mm-hmm. caught trying to like sneak out once he's realized that he's the killer, and yes. Then he's like, oh, why don't you come in for a drink, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, and then later he's got this guy like chained up and stuff, and he's like, isn't it funny how like your politeness led to this situation, because you could have just taken off, you knew that like something fucked up yep. was happening here, and your sense
and
of Sookie, like your
the
sense
same
of
thing.
Duty and politeness kept you in this situation where now I'm gonna fucking kill you. And yeah, that's like this is exact situation where Sookie knew she could have
so
just
funny.
Ran out of that fucking building, but instead she like felt the need to keep up appearances, and now she's in a basement.
Yeah. Well, now I really have to rewatch this movie because I didn't remember. I read all the books. I love them. Well, the first three books.
Yeah, me too.
I love them. I love the Swedish movie. I want to rewatch the whole Swedish series too, because it's really good. My parents rewatched the Swedish series quite recently. The way you're describing that scene is 100% this. I totally see the parallels there. Yeah. Completely. Because I would have been like, oh, I left something in the car, bye, like, and just peace out.
Right, yeah. And it's funny how often I think about that scene, because I'm always like, because I do feel like, you know, because I'm not like a super confrontational or whatever. So I'm like, what would I do?
Right.
Like, would I feel like I needed to like not be rude? Like, I was so worried, you know, am I so worried about being rude that I'm like not going to save my own ass? I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
I guess it's also scary, though, because if they're going to do this to a vampire, like, what are they going to do to someone that supports vampire? Like, you know what I mean? So there's also the fear of, like, okay, they might actually try to kill me also.
Yeah.
I could imagine freezing in that scenario.
Yeah, totally.
I know we didn't talk about every little thing. We didn't really talk about Lafayette, but he had a couple... We talked about him having his PTSD breakdown, but we did not discuss the fact that Pam showed up at Merlot's and basically was like, you're selling V for us now, which is a big deal.
And that's another thing that I think is like kind of a quintessential season two thing in my brain, is Pam showing up and forcing Lafayette to sell vampire blood, which I can't remember, like, genuinely I can't remember why or like what happens with this.
I don't remember where that goes. I mean, like, it could just, I really don't remember either, but it could just be like
supplementary income.
Like, we want to be in control of it rather than having the humans, like,
profit make money off of it, us,
which I get. Yeah, I get that. It makes sense.
Yep.
Do you want to rank the cliffhanger?
So I think in terms of, like, a cliffhanger where you're, like, you're left hanging off the cliff, like, oh, my God, what happens next? And in terms of it being just really, like, shocking and, like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. I think this is a really good one, and I'm happy to put it anywhere between number 3 and number 5. I don't know how you feel, but I'm leaning.
I'm thinking after the dead leg, but before Barry is a telepath.
So what number did?
Sorry, I apologize. So it would be the new number 5.
Okay, yeah, that works for me.
Cool. So Daphne puts bullhead on Marianne. Sam screams. Perfect. We don't really, I mean, we've seen Lorena before as far as character intros, but this is the first time we're seeing her in present day, so all we know really is that she's intrigued by Eric's offer or suggestion, but she also is playing very like, I might not want Bill back, so we don't really know what her game is yet.
And to me, that, like, not even remembering what happens later, but to me, that feels very like, no, I don't like that boy, even though she's, like, literally wearing his necklace right now. So,
right.
We'll see about you, Lorena, still carrying a torch, you know, 70-plus years later.
Mm-hmm.
All right, superlatives?
Yes. I would say, who would you say is, sorry, I accidentally opened the wrong thing. Okay. Who would you say is most chaotic for you?
I'm going to agree with you on this one and go with Marianne. Marianne always. Like, what is more chaotic than her? Nothing.
I agree with that. I guess you're agreeing with me, and I'm agreeing with you too. I just feel like Marianne is going to be chaotic the whole season. And
that's kind of her whole vibe.
I'm actually, like, I wanted to pick someone else, but I really couldn't.
I did, too. Else. I wanted to at least have something that's not, like, I just agree with Elise. Like, I wanted to, like, posit some
I got you.
But,
we don't want to just keep saying the same thing all the time.
Exactly, yeah. But, like, chaos is Marianne's brand, essentially. Like, you really can't get more chaotic than vibrating a community into an orgy. I just really can't think of something more chaotic than that. So. And, like, human sacrifice. Chaos all around.
Yeah, that is... Yes, I would agree. And opposite of you agreeing with me, I think that I'm ignoring my previous answer and going with what you have here. So if you want to say that.
Yeah, so for most horny, I'm saying, like, aside from the actual, like, literal orgy that happens, I think it has to be Sarah Newlin. who is so horny, she has convinced herself and Jason that God wants them to fuck. Love that for her. Very horny.
Yeah. I love that for her, too. I think that, as I said earlier, I just love when Jason is fucking, and I think Sarah Newland's adorable, and she's a shitty person, but, you know, some of the hottest people are.
Get your bag, babe. In bag is Jason's dick in this scenario.
That's funny. Right. I don't know that I really read up to this part of the book because I decided to take a nap this afternoon.
That's fair.
But there, I think where I left off, they were going into the church, but I don't remember if they were like in there yet. I don't really have much book spoilers, except for the fact that this is not related to this episode at all, but I was looking ahead in the season and realized that Sophie Ann's in this season, and I had forgotten she comes this early.
Oh, yeah. So we are fully in spoiler territory, everyone. If you have not watched this season, at least, then scamper off. But I was looking at the episode guide to just like see how many episodes, like how far into the season.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Because
I was like, this feels like end of season territory, but we're only halfway through. So I was like, what the fuck?
I think it's just because they wrap up the church stuff first and then go back and deal with the stuff. It felt like they have two different endings.
Because there are like two separate plots happening. Like storylines happening in the season.
Exactly.
But I looked and I saw that Sophie Ann is later, and I fucking love her. And I got like very excited. But yeah, they do mention the queen in this or the previous episode. I don't know. I watched like
I think it was last a bunch time. Of them, yeah. But yeah. I'm excited.
I'm super excited because I love Evan Rachel Wood in this role.
Yes, me too. I recently rewatched Practical Magic, and I always forget that she's like one of the daughters in that, and she's so baby. Mm-hmm. I love Evan Rachel Wood in general.
Ooh, 13 is another movie I want to rewatch.
I haven't seen that one mostly because I was like, Elise. I feel like I was scared to watch it. I know I need to watch it.
Oh my god, I will watch it with you. Like, I love that movie. It's fucked up though.
Yeah,
like, it's good. No, it's good. Fine. It's so good.
Fucked up's good.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel scared to watch movies that I know are going to make me feel like emotions.
100%. And it will. It will. But it's going to.
Yeah.
It's going to like tingle some like 13-year-old version of you, you know, like that part of your brain.
I'm excited. Yep. Do you have anything that you wanted to say before we wrap up?
Episode wise, I think I'm done. Yeah.
Awesome. Me too. Where can people reach you?
You can find me on Instagram and probably a few other places at Ragey Cakes. You can also find my YA podcast, that is only sometimes YA, let's be honest, at ActyAge on Instagram, all the places. And we will be having, the book Fourth Wing and Iron Flame have been very huge in like the zeitgeist right now, and we're gonna have an episode on that coming up pretty soon, so or probably by the time that this episode airs. So yeah, go check that out if you like romanticy and dragons.
Awesome. Romanticy, that is a good word.
I know, I love it.
I like the romance. I want to be into fantasy so much because I feel like, I mean, all of my friends read it,
mm-hmm.
but I can't get into it. I don't know.
It's more fun, I will say, like, I don't know why, but the older I get, the more I'm, like, looking, like, if people are not kissing in this story, I'm really not that interested.
I got you.
Romanticy is kind of a fun, like, it's not high fantasy where it's, like, very heavy world building, like, it's not super, like, dense where you have to be, like,
I need
to know, like, 15 languages to understand what I'm reading. It's much more approachable, much more accessible, and there's horny stuff in it. So
we love horny stuff on this podcast.
We really do. So yeah, if that's your vibe, you should check those books out. They're really fun.
Awesome. And you can find me on Blue Sky Letterboxd and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Pod Rates, a Deep Space Nine rewatch podcast, on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Instagram at Pod Rates. That's W-R-A-I-T-H-S. And wherever you listen to podcasts. Recently, which should be out by the time this airs, I was on the podcast about Disney. It's not a Disney podcast. Dream with Mind and Heart, and we talked about Cinderella adaptations. Melissa is actually on that episode with me as well, and so that is anywhere you get your podcasts as well.
Two.
Said too many as well.
So. Oh my god, fun.
It is fun. We had a really nice time. Thanks very much to DJ Empirical for our theme. You can find the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at FangBangersPod. And email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood, please, to fangbangerspod@gmail.com. I'm Elise, and my blood type is field orgies.
And I'm Tasia, and my blood type is the perfect amount of titty. Bye.
Bye.